Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Monday, February 15th, 2010, the start of a brand new week. It's President's Day. You know, when I was a kid, we used to celebrate all the major presidents' birthdays on different days. We got a lot of days off from school and then decided to just lump them all together, and it's President's Day, and we celebrate all of them at one time. And, of course, my favorite is Millard Fillmore, who of all the presidents of the United States did the absolute least damage to the country during his administration here. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what I'm starting to call the Silicon Curtain. We know, or if you're as old as I am, when the Soviet Union basically came in and took over East Germany at the end of World War II, and they wanted to make sure that the people inside the Soviet Union and East Germany weren't getting bad ideas from the Allies in the West. So they blocked off all communication, and they called it the Iron Curtain, or at least our side called it the Iron Curtain, that descended across Eastern Europe, and it was a bad thing. And we had the Voice of America trying to send radio messages into the Soviet Union, and the Soviets were setting up jammers to prevent it from being heard, and it was this war over what people could see and hear, and we were told it was a bad thing when a government puts up a wall to prevent you from seeing and reading things the government doesn't want you to know, that is anti-freedom, it is anti-free speech, it is a dictatorship, and it's a bad thing. Well, all of a sudden, we're seeing the same thing start to happen coming the other way, and I'm calling it the Silicon Curtain. And, of course, I'm talking about these growing efforts to set up censorship and blockade of certain websites and political content. You know, last week Alex Jones was saying that his websites were no longer visible in Australia. Earlier today I went out and I used what are called traceroute servers in New Zealand and Australia and was unable to reach my website from down there. And I posted a little story on whatreallyhappened.com saying, you know, I think we're starting to see the censorship come in there. Now, I did get some emails from some people inside Australia and New Zealand who are able to bypass the censorship, the red censorship, because of using alternative DNS systems like OpenDNS and Google DNS. And apparently Google is becoming quite supportive of this free and open internet down in Australia. They're sort of joining up with this growing political backlash against the internet censorship. And as you know, they were trying to do that in New Zealand. It's been a huge backlash against them. As of the last time I checked, it looks like access to my site is at least partly restored, but I'm running some internet statistics right now to compare the volume of traffic that I'm getting from down under now with the numbers that I generated on our last server a couple of weeks ago. Speaking of which, of course, we're on the new server at whatreallyhappened.com. We're still getting the kinks out and smoothing it out, but it does seem to be running a lot smoother. We seem to be having a little bit less trouble with certain very immature interests out there who are basically the authors of the Silicon Curtain. They don't want you to see and hear certain things that they don't want you to know, and you don't have their permission to know these things. And obviously, I think ultimately, history has shown they're doomed to failure. The Iron Curtain fell, so too will the Silicon Curtain, and possibly a lot faster. Now, as I mentioned before, Google is apparently down there, and so is Yahoo. They've joined the Australian Library and Information Association and the Inspire Foundation. They are creating a coalition to basically lobby the Australian government against the Rudd government plans to filter the internet. Now, some of it's overt, some of it's covert. We know there's a lot of game playing out there in the land of DNS, but the good news is the alternative DNSs, Open DNS, Google DNS, and so forth and so on, seem to be immune to this kind of stuff. All right, I want to talk about the economy. Obviously, President's Day, the banks are closed, and so forth and so on. We are getting this report from the White House that is basically saying that the unemployment situation is not going to improve before 2013, by which time Barack Obama may be well out of the White House if he's a one-term president, which it's starting to look like. A lot of Democratic candidates are saying, I'm not even going to try in November. And they're announcing their resignations and retirements and so forth and so on. So the poll numbers are definitely anti-incumbent. They're definitely anti-Democrat. And again, along with that anti-incumbent, anybody taking money from Israel, kick them out. Get them out. Get them out. They are selling this country into the control of a foreign government. That is treason. There are wars going on, and we have politicians in the United States who are serving the interests of a foreign government. That is treason if, in fact, those interests do not line up with what is best for the American people here. So anyway, they're talking about long-term mass unemployment. Now, the downside of that, of course, is that we're looking at millions of American workers who are have already run off their unemployment benefits, even with the extension, and are about to run off the unemployment benefits, and even with extensions. We're looking at 5 million American workers with no job and no unemployment insurance by June. When those government checks stop showing up, and people don't have a reason to stay quiet and polite anymore, I think that's where we're going to start seeing some rioting really come to the streets of America. Because, people get hungry. They stop thinking about patriotism, and they stop thinking about Al-Qaeda, and they stop thinking about the rest of that stuff. When they are hungry, when their children are crying for food, people get real, they get down to the basics. They get down to that bottom level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and that's when things really start getting ugly. Now, the Federal Reserve, apparently after printing up all these trillions of dollars on your tab and pouring it all over Wall Street, they're going to start pulling back on that now because the hyperinflationary pressure from all of that extra cash is beginning to really be felt in the stores. I don't know if you've been shopping lately. Go to the market. I mean, prices are just completely out of control on the basic necessities. It's kind of a weird thing. You go into, like, the big department stores and, the big items from last Christmas, like the flat panel TVs and stuff, they can't even give them away. I mean, it's amazing the prices that are on these things. If anybody had any money, it'd be a good time to buy one. But the basic necessities of life, food, fuel, clothing, medicine, those are just scared. They're going right through the roof here. And with them, mortgage rates are going to go up because as the Fed cuts the funds, there is less money to lend, and it becomes a seller's market on the mortgages. Now, it kind of already has been all along. There was an interesting video that got put up called Slap in the Face. It was a video with two guys on it. We ran it yesterday, and it details. You have to watch this thing. You really have to watch this thing. And we've been saying for a long time, the bailouts were basically taking trillions of dollars from the American people to give to the banks to loan back to the American people at interest. And then we started noticing that the loans weren't happening. The bankers were just putting the money in their own pocket, or they were buying out other banks and companies with it. And all of this talk about refinancing the mortgages of Americans in order to keep them in their home just didn't seem to be happening. And now we know why. This video, Slap in the Face, You Won't Believe the Sweetheart Deal, that the Indy Mac boys were given by the FDIC, you have to watch it. And as a matter of fact, I should have bumped it up to the top of what really happened, and I'm going to do that on this next break that we have coming up here in just a couple of minutes. But the short version is, the way that the bailout deal for the banks and mortgage companies was set up, when the FDIC shuts down a bank and a mortgage company and they sell it to somebody else, usually at pennies on the dollar, whoever's bought that bank and all those mortgages can turn around, and because of the government's guarantee on housing prices, otherwise known as TARP, the banks can actually make more money kicking you out of your home than by allowing you to refinance. And this is why we're seeing this epidemic of foreclosures. The banks don't want to refinance your home. They don't want to come to an understanding. They don't want to give you any more credit, because if they can kick you out of your home, they're going to make more money. It's the same deal that we had with this boneheaded tax policy that created a financial incentive for corporations to send your jobs overseas. It was great for the corporations, and I'm sure the people writing those checks to the political campaigns, they loved it. And the politicians who were getting those checks loved it. But it destroyed our economy, and this is doing exactly the same thing. I don't know if it's just accident and stupidity, or if it's deliberate, if we're really seeing the end of private property ownership in the United States of America. But you've got to look at this video. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the FDIC has already issued a public denial of the content of this video. We'll be back after these commercials.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And, yeah, the phone lines are open right now. We're ready to go here. I actually need more computers here. I'm a little bit locked up. I just got that that video is up at the website. Yeah, there it is right at the very top here. The cache has already gone through and we can look at that situation. But you definitely want to look at that. Now, the FDIC has already come out with a response to this video basically saying it's blatant falsehoods and repeats old inaccuracies. They don't have any real specifics there why the data in there is inaccurate. But what is important about this video is you need to understand that it actually cites a for real case. They went in basically to the financial records. They're not making wild allegations. They followed the paper trail of this one particular mortgage, of how it was foreclosed on, the note that the foreclosed homeowner had to sign for the unpaid balance, how much the bank actually paid for the home, and how much they got in taxpayer funds through the TARP program. And basically, the bank makes more money foreclosing your home than it does allowing you to find some way to stay in there. So it's, you know, it's definitely worth watching. It's at the top of What Really Happened right now, and you definitely need to be looking at that. All right, moving right along here, let's see. We talked about this before, where a lot of towns, local communities in the United States are starting to print up their own currency. And we talked about this before, because we had, you know, been following the story of Bernard Nauthaus, who had created the Liberty Dollar and then the Ron Paul Dollar. And these were coins which were made out of silver and gold, and there were claim check certificates for the equivalent silver and gold. It was sort of a recreation of the original monetary system of the United States of America. And as you know, shortly after he created the Ron Paul Dollar, the entire Liberty Dollar enterprise was shut down. It was raided. Personally, I think George Bush just simply got jealous that somebody wanted to put Ron Paul's face on a coin and not his. But the bottom line is they absolutely shut it down, and they're trying to basically create this idea that the only legal money in the United States are the Federal Reserve notes by virtue of the legal tender laws. Now, that is not, in fact, true. Money is whatever people are willing to trade of value to each other. If I come over here and I've got a basket of apples and you want to trade me for some candles that you've made, that's commerce. There's no Federal Reserve notes involved, which the government doesn't like because it means they can't tax you on the transaction. But that's what commerce is. It's trading of goods of value. And when the United States was set up, the monetary system consisted of items of a fixed known value, gold and silver coin, also copper and nickel for the smaller denominations. That was the money. The money had intrinsic inherent value. So the Federal Reserve note comes along and they're trying to convince you that, you know, it's basically their stuff, or, you know, their way or the highway kind of thing. And the bottom line here is that, let's see, let me close this and see what happens. The bottom line is that we're starting to see more and more communities start to print their own script for use within their own borders. And this worked during the Great Depression. Because the problem is our banking system right now is drawing all of the currency back out of circulation to put in their own pockets to balance their books on this whole compound interest deal. And that is leaving cities and towns and you and I without the money to carry on our commerce. Well, the idea is if once we accept the idea that we don't have to use their money anymore, if we in our own communities can come up with an agreed-to currency, then we can start doing business within our own community using this paper currency. And all of a sudden, there's enough money to put people to work and to buy and sell the goods and services being produced. And it worked during the Great Depression, and it worked during the Confederate War. It even worked during the American Revolution, before the Revolution even began, before the Currency Act that plunged the colonies into poverty. Each of the individual states printed their own currency, and they printed up enough of it to make sure that business could proceed. And the Bank of England didn't like that and lobbied King George III to pass the Currency Act. And you don't hear much about that. When you go to grade school and they talk about the American Revolution, they'll talk about the Stamp Act, and they'll talk about the Tea Tax, and they'll talk about the Boston Tea Party. But they don't talk about the Currency Act, because it was the anger from the Currency Act that really fueled the revolution. And the reason they don't want you to know about it is because we now live under the same financial system that was imposed on us by the Currency Act of Great Britain. And, somebody in the chat room is saying our site is having some problems. So we're having some issues with the new server, or we're being hacked. I'm not sure which one. All right. Anyway, getting back to things. So the towns are starting to print their own money. And, it's probably going to help them a little bit. But we're probably going to start seeing the government say, no, you can't do that. The bottom line is, right now, if Obama wanted to turn the economy around, he could pick up that phone, he could call the Treasury Department, and he could say, whatever we have of value left in Fort Knox, gold, silver, tungsten, tantalum, whatever, print up notes on the basis of it. This is what John Kennedy did. The president has the legal right to have the Treasury issue his own currency. Abraham Lincoln did it. John F. Kennedy did it. Turned the economy around. He could do it if he wanted to. He just won't. Now, speaking of Obama, one of the problems that we're dealing with right now is Obama basically coming out here with his executive orders. And the executive orders basically, and this is breaking another one of his campaign promises, he campaigned against George Bush's use of the executive orders, and said, I'm never going to do that. We're going to have the Congress. We're going to be, in total transparency, and everything's going to be above board. And now all of a sudden we're finding that Barack Obama is basically resorting to executive orders even more than his predecessor. And as a result, he's issuing all these edicts. And the question I have before we go to this next break and I try and get things up and running again, before we go to the break here, the question I have is, where in the Constitution is the president given the authority to simply issue these dictates? The original purpose of the executive order was to allow the president to implement the will of the Congress, but not to go outside the limits of the congressional legislation and, of course, perusal by the United States Supreme Court. And yet, over the last couple of administrations, we seem to have seen this evolving central executive citing all these states of emergency and all the rest of this stuff, writing these executive orders. I believe back in the Clinton administration, they were joking about it. Stroke of the pen, law of the land, pretty cool, was the saying that was going around. But that's not the way it's supposed to work here. One of the things Barack Obama will probably shove through with executive order is a carbon tax. Even as ClimateGate and the whole global warming hoax collapses, Obama needs those carbon taxes, and he's just going to dictate it. That's what it will be. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We seem to have our computers back up and running here. I need more computers or fewer things to be doing during the content of the show here. We are going to go to the phones. We've got Dan in Oregon. Aloha, Dan. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, Mike. Bear with me, because I'm really reaching into the back of my head. But I thought it was legal to mint gold and silver coins as long as the gold was greater than that of the U.S. For example, if the U.S. coin had an ounce of gold and you printed your own gold coin, you would have to have at least 1.1 ounces of gold. It had to be greater than the U.S. Dollar.
I'm not sure that's entirely accurate. I think that basically that the gold content of the coin, you know, had to be obviously, you know, fair. In fact, the original laws of the United States, it was a death penalty offense to debase the currency. I mean, under that end of that Currency Act of 17, I'm blanking on the exact year, but under the Currency Act, basically the entire Federal Reserve Bank, you know, have a death sentence hanging over them because they certainly did debase the currency and continue to do so to this very day. But my understanding is that anybody can mint anything they want. The question is whether it's legal tender or not. That has to be decided by the government. And right now the government has declared by fiat that only Federal Reserve notes are legal tender. Now, that doesn't prevent you from deciding that you wish to accept something else of value in exchange for whatever you're selling, whether it's a gold or silver coin or, you know, replacement part or apples for oranges and so forth and so on. The government doesn't like that because it views every transaction as an opportunity for income tax, which is actually kind of nonsense if you think about it, because there's no income. It's an even swap. In fact, one of the arguments against the so-called federal income tax as applied to working people is there is no income. Their labor is their property. That's been ruled on by the United States Supreme Court many, many, many times. And so the idea is that if you give 40 hours or 60 hours of your time to your employer every week and they give you back a check that pays for that same thing, it's an item-for-item swap. There is no profit in either direction. Therefore, there shouldn't really be a tax. Okay, but, you know, you can swap any items that you want of any kind of value. You know, we've had the government's local government trying to get into yard sales and say you got to do a 1099 for how much money you get in on the yard sale. They're going to the flea markets. They're trying to – it's just nonsensical. And they're justifying it by saying they're going to start sending inspectors around to the yard sales to make sure that the items being sold are safe and of a reasonable quality to be sold publicly. I'm sorry. It is a yard sale. When you go to a yard sale or a flea market, you understand, you know, it's – you know, it's what you see is what you get, and buyer beware, and, you know, sometimes you're going to get stung, and sometimes you aren't. But now the government wants to intrude on that because then they can justify taxing it. But I'm not aware of any law that says that if you mint a gold coin, it has to contain more gold than the coins of the U.S. government, especially since the government doesn't mint very many gold coins anymore, certainly not for general currency purposes. They mint investment instruments, but that's something else entirely.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, again, this is way back into my head, and I'm not quite sure on this, but, you know, like years ago, states used to have their own currency, you know,
yes,
based on gold, and I guess I'm saying, why can't states do it and forget the federal government money?
Well, I think technically they can. It's just that it will not be able to go across the state border because the federal government has decreed that only Federal Reserve notes are legal tender for all debts, public and private, in the United States. Now, we're already hearing that some states are considering setting up their own state-owned bank in order to generate currencies and financing, you know, to help the people along during these economic hard times. But certainly the federal government and the Federal Reserve, their goal is not only to make sure that you're using no other money than the Federal Reserve note, they're even trying to make sure that it's all going to be plastic. Because the idea is, you know, when I was a kid and we still had silver coinage, you could go through your entire life and not have to deal with a bank if you so chose. But now everything you do, it's on plastic. It goes through the bank. They get a few pennies off it. They get a piece of the action on everything that we do. And the banks are trying to lobby themselves to be the indispensable center of all modern life so that they can basically extract wealth. Every transaction goes through the bank. They shave off just a little tiny bit. And that's why they're trying to push for the cashless society. They're selling it on the excuse that they're fighting the drug traffic by pushing for the cashless society, and they're fighting terrorism by forcing you to use your plastic cards. But the reality is the plastic card allows them to make a profit. It forces you to do business with the banks when you might otherwise not want to. And, of course, it's an automatic system for the government to, you know, monitor what you're buying at the stores. That's one of the reasons why these so-called shopping discount cards are starting to go away, because they're tracking your purchases with RFIDs and with, you know, whatever debit card that you're using to make the payments with. You know, cash is really becoming, you know, much, much less common. And that's by design.
I guess the question, I have one question, and then I'll hang up. In the case of a cougar ant, can the cougar ant be used as currency in the United States?
It's not considered legal tender, but obviously with its weight value of gold, you can negotiate a barter arrangement with anybody. If you want to pay for, like, let's say Joe over here has a shotgun he wants to sell, and he's willing to accept a cougar ant for it, you know, you've got a deal, and that's the commerce has gone on. It is not considered a transaction under the legal tender laws of the United States of America, but then, you know, who cares?
Right. Okay, well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
You got it, absolutely. And listen, one more thing you might want to keep in mind. We are seeing already here in the United States where supermarkets are putting in their own little cash for gold windows, where if you need to buy groceries – and you don't have any of the, you know, legal tender, the paper notes that the Federal Reserve puts out, you can pay for your groceries. They'll take your old gold jewelry, they'll look at the carat weight, and they'll weigh out, yes, you can take the groceries for, you know, this many pieces of the jewelry and one-third of this bracelet, and they'll just cut it off right there. And I think it's a very sick sign of the times. They're, you know, they're pillaging the real wealth out of this country in exchange for the paper notes.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you got it there. All right, let's go over here and talk about Afghanistan. It is not going well. I mean, we've gone from a nation of hoping for change to a nation of being seriously ticked off. And that obviously is something not just the Democrats, but the entire incumbent government. They're looking at elections this November. And we're seeing a lot of announced retirements and resignations. They understand that the people going to the polls this November are going there not to vote somebody out. They're going there to vote. I'm sorry, they're not going to vote somebody in. They're going to vote somebody out. Always a good reason to hit the polls. As a general rule of thumb, the higher the voter turnout, the angrier the voters are, and the more it's going to go against the incumbents here. So we're over here. We're stuck in Afghanistan. We're in the third day of this major surge against the Taliban strongholds. Obama is pouring tons and tons of money. It's a record war budget. Not since the end of World War II has so much of the nation's wealth been squandered on killing people on another part of the globe. And they're talking about, you know, they're spending all this money on counterinsurgency. They got 700 bases in Afghanistan. They've got something like 450 to 500 in Iraq. They're calling it counterinsurgency, which is a polite word for keeping the people we just conquered, conquered. That's what counterinsurgency means. We just invaded and took their country from them. They're ticked off at us. They want their country back. So we have to spend money and bullets and blood keeping them from taking their country back. That's what the word counterinsurgency means. Keeping what we conquered, no matter how many young lives have to be lost in the process. All right, we're going to take a break here. Phone lines are still open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933, and we'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're still tweaking our new What Really Happened server, which is faster than the old one. We are having a little bit of difficulty with it. It seems that we're being slammed by the Yahoo search engine bots, and you're supposed to be able to put them into a file called robots.txt to say, slow down. You know, don't hammer my system. And apparently there's a known issue where some of the Yahoo user agents ignore the file, and they'll just come in and pound on your system for as long as they feel it's necessary to update their listing of your directory. And, of course, during those times, our server is just getting really, really swamped. So I'm going to have to deal with that later on. All right, we're talking about the situation in Afghanistan. And it's already been marred by a lot of civilian killings. They're taking these new high-tech rockets, and they're shooting them at supposedly where they think the bad guys are, and they wander off, and they're hitting houses. They blew up a house with 12 non-combatants yesterday. It's causing a lot of unhappiness. They killed another five today just before we went to airtime. And Afghanistan's government is saying to NATO, look, you got to call this off. You're not getting anywhere. And what's going on is the NATO forces, which are mostly U.S., are running into all these booby traps and improvised explosive devices, and they're being harassed by snipers. And they insist they're blowing up a lot of stuff at the Taliban stronghold. And they're basically falling into the same trap that the Soviet Union did. The Taliban leave a bunch of traps. They have snipers shooting at the incoming army to make them think they're up against opposition. And then they simply split and blend into the general population. And after all this fighting and all this blood and all this money, the U.S. is going to capture the Taliban stronghold, and it's going to be empty. And the U.S. will declare victory, and we forced them from their stronghold. And they'll leave, and the Taliban will just go right back in, repaint the walls, plaster over the bullet holes, and it'll be back in business. They did the exact same thing to the Soviet Union. They just constantly retreated and harassed and retreated and harassed and retreated and harassed and just kept them running in circles until they simply ran out of fuel. The Afghani leaders are calling the surge imbecilic and tragic, and they're absolutely right. And I think Barack Obama is trying to make it look like we finally got a victory of some kind after 8 years. But he's not going to get it. I think Barack Obama was thinking that if he could go in and just kill all of the Taliban, create a desolation and call it peace, then he can free up troops for the eventual war that's going to happen in Iran. And Israel's going to start it for us. Good friends that they are. But it's not working. It's not working. And, over the weekend, there was all this nonstop coverage about the surge. We're going to get the Taliban. And they were showing this same video of this Marine cleaning his gun over and over and over again, which I guess is the only footage they had coming out of there. And now we're getting the reports of civilian deaths and IEDs and snipers and not a whole heck of a lot else. And as I said, the U.S. militarily is making the same mistakes the USSR did. All right, I want to get onto this climate gate situation one more time because it's getting rather colorful. And, there's this supposed to be this independent investigation into the climate gate emails. And it's already turning into a farce because a third member of the panel has had to step down because they are a proponent of, supporter of, the theory of human-caused global warming. They're not unbiased. They're financially linked to these interests. The impartiality of glaciologist Jeffrey Bolton has been questioned after he admitted that he firmly was in the camp of the Al Gore human-caused global warming people. So the so-called independent panel to investigate the content of the ClimateGate emails and software has been loaded up. Has been loaded up with all of these pro-global warming people. It's not an independent commission. It's designed to find that there's nothing to the ClimateGate emails and that whoever is reading the actual computer software and pointing to where the code says that fraud is being put in there, well, they're just a bunch of fringe conspiracy theorist people. They're struggling as hard as they can to keep the lid on this thing here. I'm going to take a break from ClimateGate. We've got a caller, and I want to get to him before we go to the news break here. Jim in Arizona. Aloha, Jim. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha to you. I've seen and heard that the Taliban, when they were in control, all but eliminated the production of poppies and all but eliminated the drug trade.
That's true.
And
now you were caught in the drug trade, they cut your head right off.
Okay, now the established media is saying they're going after the Taliban to make them stop growing the poppies. Could you comment on this? Do you understand my question?
Well, I understand your question exactly, and we have posted at whatreallyhappened.com. In fact, there's a permanent link at the top of the page, you know, why your children are dying in Afghanistan. And it is pictures of U.S. troops protecting and guarding the opium production in Afghanistan. This is Vietnam all over. During Vietnam, heroin flooded into the United States. It was coming in from Vietnam, from Khun Sa's Golden Triangle poppy fields. It was processed down in Vietnam. It was shipped back to the United States inside the body bags of our dead Vietnamese soldier, dead Vietnam soldiers, and went stateside and flooded out into there. And the CIA was making tons of money off. That was the heyday of Air America. There's a movie of that same name starring Mel Gibson that is based on the real-life exploits of Air America and the drug running that was going on. Barry Seal's cargo plane, the fat lady, was an old Air America plane, the one that they were flying the operations down there where Eugene Hassenfuss crashed. That was the same group of people. They just moved from Vietnam down to Central America, and they went from heroin to cocaine. But it's the same deal all over again. The fact is that the Taliban, by the way, Taliban simply means students. The Taliban got rid of the drug trade in Afghanistan. They had some very stiff, strict penalties. The U.S. invades, and all of a sudden the poppy fields are blooming again, and the U.S. justifies allowing it to happen by saying, it's the only livelihood these poor farmers have. I'm sorry, what were these farmers doing when the Taliban was in control and drugs were banned? What were they growing then? Probably food crops. But now we've got bumper crops of opium poppy, and the heroin is flooding into the United States again. We had an article from Boston.com about a month ago. The heroin coming into the U.S. from Afghanistan is so pure and so concentrated that we're seeing a flood of overdose deaths. It's the same thing all over. So this idea of trying to blame the Taliban for the heroin trade is nonsense, and we've got the photos to prove it. In fact,
that part on the website, I just haven't seen the established media do anything with it at all.
Oh, of course they won't do anything about it all. They didn't report on the heroin coming in from Vietnam. They didn't report on the cocaine coming up from Central America during the whole Iran-Contra hearing. Every time they got anywhere near that airport at Mena, Arkansas, you know, under Governor Bill Clinton, Daniel Inouye would scream executive session. They'd slam the doors and kick the media and the public out of there. There was a limited hangout. They exposed the gun-running part of the operation, but they kept the lid on the government-sanctioned drug-running. And you know what's really insulting? Back when Reagan was in office and his Attorney General, William French Smith, signed, put through the executive order allowing the CIA to engage or do business with drug runners without having to report them to the DEA. It was called the CIA's license to smuggle. His assistant was Ken Starr. Ken Starr was later put in charge of the cover-up over the whole Whitewater situation. And instead of getting to the real heart of government-sanctioned drug running and the money being used to finance political campaigns, Ken Starr focused us all on Monica Lewinsky in a stained blue dress, and that was where the media said, oh, yes, that's the important part of the story. Never mind all the cocaine that was flooding into the United States and going out to Ricky Ross in Los Angeles and the rest of it. And I understand Ken Starr has now been appointed president of a university somewhere.
Wow.
I mean, talk about a slap in the face to everybody who ever had a family member who got hooked on crack or cocaine in the United States that was brought in by the Central Intelligence Agency. And the guy who helped do it, who helped authorize it, is now head of a university. It's just sickening here. All right, we're going to take a break for news and commercials. Jim, thanks a lot for the phone call. I'm going to go ahead and repost that poppy article at the top of What Really Happened. By the time we come back, it'll be in the cache and it'll be visible on the front page. Until we get back here, stay tuned and aloha.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the second hour of our show today. I'm watching the corporate media feed here on TV, and apparently the U.S. government is announcing that they are winning the war against the Taliban. basically, new major offensive, Taliban's fight to the finish is the headline they just ran on this, and that this is President Obama's Afghan war test, which ties into what I was telling you last hour, that the reason they're doing this is Obama needs to claim a victory to bolster support for eventually going into Iran. We've been in Afghanistan for 8 years, longer than World War II. We've been there just as long as the USSR. The American people are tired of all the wars. We're tired of the wars in Afghanistan, tired of the war in Iraq. We've been there 5 years. We're just going into Somalia, Pakistan, Yemen, who knows where all else. And so they're trying to make it look like they're about to finally bring the war in Afghanistan to an end. And I'm not kidding you. They're claiming that combat operations will be over in the next 2 days. Now, if they were really fighting the core of the Taliban, nobody's going to make a prediction like that. I think they've just realized they got suckered into attacking basically a deserted base. So they're going to go in, mess it up, and declare victory and go back to whatever. Then the Taliban is going to reappear again. Remember how many years ago when they were saying about Iraq that, it's the last throes and one more surge will get it. We're always hearing this kind of stuff from the war propagandists. We're about to win. We haven't won yet, but we're almost there. One more surge, one more tax check. We'll get there. And they never do. We're the world's most warmongering nation, to judge by our defense budget. There's always one more battle. There's always one more person who needs killing. There's always one more mineral resource that we just have to bring democracy to. Just amazing. All right, getting back to this whole global warming thing. Talk about raising on a busted flush. The global warming cultists are still out there. They're trying to find some way they can salvage this. And they're dealing, it's a busted flush. We've got the original ClimateGate scandal itself, where the emails and computer software, thousands of documents leaked from Hadley CRU, confirmed that they were hiding the temperature decline, that they were fudging the data, that the computer software was being altered to produce the desired result of the hockey stick curve. We have the Freedom of Information Act scandal, in which the British government is trying to focus solely on the leaking of the emails and software as the crime, which is sort of like treating Watergate as just a burglary and not looking at what the burglary actually exposed to light. Then we have the Chinagate dimension, where the Guardian newspaper found evidence that Chinese weather station measurements were seriously flawed, couldn't be located. We're hearing that a lot. Even in the over the weekend, Dr. Phil Jones, the former head of Hadley CRU, came out basically and admitted there isn't any evidence of warming for the last 15 years. And he explains away all the confusion by saying, I'm really lousy at organizing. Everybody knows that I just lose things all over the place. I'm sorry. For the money that they were getting, and given that this was supposed to be the key critical data on which all of their work was based, copies, Xeroxes, backup hard drives, I mean, this is ClimateGate's version of the dog ate my homework. Just take my word for it. I've got this wonderful hockey stick graph, personally autographed by Al Gore, and you can just take that to the bank. Well, actually, Al Gore's taking it to the bank. Then we had Himalayagate, where they had this IPCC claim that the glaciers were going to vanish. That turned out to be just an off-the-cuff comment with no scientific basis. Okay, then we had Pachuri is financially tied in with this whole thing. I mean, he's so messed up. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Now there's this situation where the IPCC claimed that 50% of the Netherlands was below sea level. That's not accurate. It's only 26%. And then over the weekend, there was another one where they basically were trying to say that global warming is going to bring starvation to Africa. And that's nonsense. Anybody who's grown up on a farm knows that the warmer the weather is, the longer the growing season, and the greater the bumper crops. And as we've already documented, there are companies that go to commercial greenhouses and install carbon dioxide enhancement systems to raise the amount of carbon dioxide inside the greenhouses because it makes the plants grow better. And it just goes on, and it's a huge, huge laundry list about all of these things that they've tried to claim that just absolutely don't show up. Now, the biggest one that we've got right now is starting in 1990, which was, remember, the beginning of the hockey stick. starting in 1990, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, your tax dollars pay these people's salary, began to systematically eliminate climate measuring stations in cooler parts of the world. In 1990, they had 6,000 weather stations that were away from the urban heat islands. Now there's only about 1,500, 4,500 measuring stations in the climate area, and in the cooler areas of the climate. We're being systematically taken down. Okay, the reason I'm hemming and hawing, it looks like our Ustream feed has again died. I seem to be having so much problems with them. Okay, I can't get through to Ustream right now. All right, so I'm sorry. Yeah, the Ustream feed just died. I don't know what the problem is with Ustream, but they just died. All right, so now, because ClimateGate is failing, basically the whole human-caused global warming hoax is collapsing. Everybody knows it was a hoax. Everybody knows it was about selling global government. Everybody knows that it was all about the, raising carbon taxes and tricking you out of your freedoms. All right. Okay, here we go. Here we go. All right, looks like Ustream is back. Jeez, we're having a terrible day with the computer system. So darned hackers here. All right, let me back up and start again, and I'm sorry for making you go through all of that, but I don't have a technical director or anything here in the office. I do it all. I'm pounding on the keyboards and jiggling the wires and all the rest of that stuff. So the global warming hoax has collapsed. The polls are showing that the public understands that they are, in fact, being lied to on this subject. The public understands that it's all about raising taxes and taking away the freedoms and selling global government. And so we're already starting to see the same people are trying to come up with something else they can use to scare you. And we linked a whole bunch of those articles to the front of whatreallyhappened.com today. Cell phone waste, the next big threat to the environment. Another story, the next major threat to the ozone layer, nitrous oxide. Your Ready Whip is destroying the planet. It's the whole man-bear-pig thing all over again. Another headline, nano-waste, the next big threat. Plasma screen TVs, the next environmental threat. Earth's growing nitrogen threat. And, you know, concerns about will we have enough fresh water? The absence of fresh water is a greater danger than the financial crisis, and it goes on and on and on and on. Now, for the last 50 years, the United States government has controlled our society by keeping us in a constant state of fear. Be afraid of the commies. Be afraid of the drug lords. Be afraid of criminals. Be afraid of terrorists. Be afraid of those gun rights kooks. Be afraid of Saddam's nuclear weapons. Be afraid of carbon dioxide. This is not terrorism. This is scarerism. Government ruling you by fear. Now, the dependence on public fear as a means of social control is evident in the government spending priorities. Funding for research that might actually make our lives better and find solutions to problems is being cut. But funding to universities and these institutions to find the next big scary monster is at record levels. NASA's research funding got cut. But a whole new government agency to resell the idea that the world is getting warmer and it's all your fault, they're fully funded. And their online website has already been caught cherry-picking the data to sell this idea. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back here. We're going to be talking to Rick in Kansas, John in Texas, and other situations. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and we seem to have things back running again. Apparently, Ustream is having their computer issues as well, and so the signal's been going up and down and up and down. But we seem to be up right now. We have about 800 viewers watching the show right now, and, of course, we are recording this for later playback if anybody wants to come in on that. So, anyway... Let's see, somebody is saying that, yeah, the sound is going out. If you're not hearing it, there's a problem there. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. And what is on your mind today?
Yes. Hi, Mike. What's on my mind is I just got done watching a documentary yesterday with a CO2 specialist was talking about what we talked about how doubling the CO2 will increase the crop yields 25% to 50%, and I just thought it was interesting that, you know, they had a CO2 expert saying the same thing we've been saying for quite a while now. And the other thing I wanted to say was your poll, 1,817 people were polled, and 98% are more afraid of the U.S. government than Muslim terrorists. And I thought that was very interesting.
Well, I put up that poll there, you know, specifically because of the comment I was talking about how the government uses fear to keep us under control. We're always being presented with a new scary thing that we are to be afraid of so that we will throw our money and our freedoms and our children's lives at the government for them to spend however they will. And I think more and more people are beginning to realize that it's been that way for a very long time, that these monsters really weren't that terrible. I met Soviet citizens. They were nice people. They didn't bite my head off. And, you know, we are now aware that carbon dioxide, I mean, I think one of the reasons they're still fighting this climate gate thing and trying to continually resell it is because they understand, you know, they can't say, okay, you caught us. Okay, we were lying to you about carbon dioxide. They have to keep trying to resell it. Because as more and more people become aware that, yes, indeed, it was this gigantic, all-encompassing conspiracy, and that is the perfect word, between the U.S. government, various agencies like NOAA and NASA, the academic institutions, the corporate media, all of these people took part in trying to sell you this hoax that the world was getting warmer, it was all your fault, and you have to pay a tax to atone for your sins. And when the public understands that's what happened, and more they obviously are from the polls we're seeing, then they're going to start looking back. What else have we been lied to? Where the government and the media and academia all agreed and told us we were wrong. Were they lying then? Were they lying to us about 9/11? Were they lying to us about the real history of World War II? Were they lying to us about Kennedy's assassination? Are they lying to us now about the legality of the tax system? And that is why this whole climate gate hoax, this whole collapse, has really laid bare the fact that we, the American people, are the most lied to people on the face of the earth.
Yep. I have one more point I wanted to make, and that is if plants are growing 50% more, then they're absorbing more CO2, plus they're putting out more oxygen for us to breathe. And I have to go, so I'm going to hang up and listen to your response if you have one. Thank you, Mike, for taking my call.
Thank you very much, Rick. And, yeah, I mean, anybody who's a farmer understands this. If you're producing more carbon dioxide, the plants are going to just suck it right in. It's not just going to stay up there in the atmosphere. In fact, one of the most absurd things that the global warming cult was trying to sell you is that the CO2 that is in the air now is okay because there's a balance of nature. And we used to say, why are you worried about the little CO2 coming out of the back of my lawnmower when we've got a volcano two islands down here that is putting out more CO2 per day than all of the cars in the United States? And their answer is, oh, well, that CO2 is already balanced because you've got jungles and foliage, and that takes the CO2 in. But it's that human contribution is going to tip the system out of balance. Now, balance of nature is a very romantic notion, but it's completely wrong. Nature has never been in balance. Nature is chaos. Nature is random chance. Nature is one life form coming into being and others going extinct, and it's been that way for 4.5 billion years. The fact is, as carbon dioxide grows, if the percentage of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere increases, plants grow larger. And the fossil record shows that. During times in Earth's ancient history where there was far more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere without the benefit of human beings, the plants did grow bigger and more lush, and they produced much more oxygen. And the bottom line is that all of this talk about carbon dioxide and assets, it's about tax money. There were scientists who demonstrated that simple reforestation, just having more green plants around your home, completely offsets any CO2 from your activity. But Al Gore and his people didn't want to hear that. They're not interested in finding a solution. They want an excuse to scare you out of tax money and out of obedience. That's the deal. Now, before we get to John here, I want to get back to this thing I was talking about where, you know, we're seeing all these new trial balloons. They're trying to convince you nitrous oxide is the villain or just nitrogen. Nitrogen is 3/4 of the atmosphere. Now they're trying to tell you that's something to be worried about. They're looking for the next big thing they can scare you with because that's the only way they have to scare you. That's why the funding for anybody who might find a solution gets cut. But IPCC and Hadley CRU are getting all this funding to scream dire warnings at us all about carbon and why we've got to do what the government says. Now, in his book, State of Fear, and if you can find it, if you haven't read it, find a copy and read it, Michael Crichton really gelled what the global warming cult was all about. And he used a character named Norman Hoffman to suggest that Eisenhower's military-industrial complex has been superseded by a far more powerful political, legal, media complex. A complex that enriches itself with an endless campaign of media-induced fears on which politicians can base their campaigns and lawyers can base endless, frivolous lawsuits. Look at any time you see a report about anything being done to green up the planet. It involves a lawsuit which takes money away from one group of people and gives it to another group of people, and the lawyer gets a 1/3 contingency fee. It is predation upon the people by the lawyers and the politicians. That is how they base their power and wealth on us. They don't actually produce anything of any use. Our country has decayed so much, we can't make anything anybody wants. We have to legislate and mandate. You will buy carbon credits. You will do cap and trade. You will stick these stickers on your products. I was looking at my wife's hairdresser earlier today to check its loading. If we can plug it in, we've got really weak circuit breakers here. And on the cord are four different stickers about how not to use the appliance, about safety this and underwriter's liability. And you know something? It's probably paying more to have people put these stickers on than it costs to manufacture the actual hairdryer because we're trying to make more and more money off of less and less product. Our country is falling. The infrastructure is collapsing. And the government and the politicians, they're trying to legislate more reasons to simply loot you. The last official act of any government is to loot the people. We're seeing it right now. And this global warming hoax was a key part of it. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with John in Texas phone call after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. You gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Before we get back to the phone lines, I'm getting some email. Apparently, some people in Australia are able to see the What Really Happened website. Many of them are not. Let me just read this one note. Just a quick note to let you know, your site is still accessible using IINet's DNS servers. This is the same ISP that fought off and won against the Media Corps, who expected them to police what people could and could not download. I've been with them for years and can confirm they are a top-notch ISP. Cheers. So we'll give a little plug for them. Other people are saying they can get in. Other people are saying they cannot. So apparently, if it is censorship, it's not working very well. Also, another email. Apparently, the cold snap is killing Florida's coral reefs. Another one for the little global warming people. We're going to go to John in Texas. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha. Well, I wanted to talk about Afghanistan, but it looked like that train's left the station.
No, if you go ahead, talk about Afghanistan.
It's been a lot on my mind because I have a coworker who's just got redeployed for his third tour in Afghanistan.
Yeesh. Yeah.
And he's been wounded twice. And he's a reservist. Yeah. He's not even full army.
Boy, you'd think they'd cut a guy like that a little bit of slack.
I mean, tell me about it, but apparently, you know, unless you're wounded to the point of can't do your job, you don't, you know, they patch you up and send you back.
Yeah, in other words, if you're useless, they'll let you go. But if they can still, you know, get one arm out there to fire the artillery, you're still on the hook.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But, you know, and it's his third tour and fifth tour overall.
Wow.
He's done two tours in Iraq and now this.
Well, I think he's got an automatic entry into heaven because he's already served enough time in hell.
Yeah. What I wanted to discuss, and you see all this going on, and how protracted all this is.
Yes.
And you see all the profit taking by the corporations that are involved, the military-industrial complex. You know, direct munition suppliers plus all the peripheral suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it strikes me now with the economy doing what it's doing that I saw a TV ad the other night and it showed what would look like a well-off middle-class husband and wife laying in bed.
Yeah.
Thinking about their daughter joining the military.
Oh yeah, I've seen those commercials, and you know, it's just they're trying to literally convince the parents to help convince the kids to sign up for the military service. I find those insulting. I really do. Americans aren't that dumb.
Not only insulting, but a shape of things to come where the only jobs that are going to be out there for these kids are going to be in the military.
Oh, I think that's one of the reasons they've crashed the economy and the job market is, you know, it's either starve or go to war. Did you hear up in Utah? Because they've run out of money for the education system. They're only going to have 3 years of high school now. There's going to be no 12th grade. You'll go right from the 11th grade either into college, the workforce, or the military, probably the military.
I mean, it's turning into what it was like before World War II. Where the military wasn't a bad gig for a guy to go into because at least he got three hots and a cot. And, you know, you had a not really a professional military. And now, you know, it's three hots and a cot and you know, we're in a, you know, hot war.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying here, and the bottom line is, you know, they're talking now that the employment situation is not going to change at least until 2013. We're talking about 5 million Americans running out of unemployment benefits in the next couple of months here, And, you know, I'm sure the military recruiters are out there saying, hey, guys, if you're out of money and you're out of your home and everything, we got a rifle. And as you say, three hots and a cot, and they're trying to build the army up that way. But, you know, I think if you get 5 million Americans and they all get angry at the same time, you know, I don't think going over to the other side of the world and killing Afghanis and Iranians and Iraqis is going to be their first choice.
No, but most people don't think of it that way. Most people don't even think about it until it's too, until they're already in. Think about
well,
it.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think a lot of people would choose the military over unemployment in peacetime. But, you know, anybody going into the military now, they know they're going to wind up getting shot at. And that's a major, major issue. Anyway, we got to let you go here because we're running out of time, and I do need to get back to a couple of other stories here. So, John, thanks a lot for the phone call. We're going to let you go. During the break, I was watching the TV. If you've never seen the movie Wag the Dog, you need to, because they create this character called Old Shoe. And they romanticize him, and he's stuck behind enemy lines, and they want to get him back, and blah, blah, blah. And we're getting the Old Shoe treatment over these three American kids who walked into Iran, despite being told by the locals, don't go that way, that's the border with Iran. And we all know that every cell phone out there now has a GPS in it, so there's no question about them being lost or anything. They walked into Iran, they got arrested, now we're getting the Old Shoe treatment, where the mothers are out there and saying, please, you've got to give our kids back, and they're basically trying to use these three to demonize Iran. Oh, those bad old Iranians, they're hanging on to our children. Your children shouldn't have walked across the border without permission. You're not supposed to do that. The only place you're really allowed to do that is coming from Mexico into the southern part of the United States. Every other border is protected and guarded, and you're not supposed to go over it without permission. It's called invasion. It's called an act of war. These kids chose to walk into Iran, and they got caught. Maybe they were volunteers to be used as a propaganda device to make Iran look bad. Frankly, if I were Ahmadinejad, I'd put him on an airplane right now and just yank the rug out of that whole situation. But it's shameless the way our government and our media are willing to basically dance on anybody's body to try and make a point to sell you the new war. Now, interestingly enough, there was an article, and again, it's linked to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. And the headline is, Iran analysis, a red light on Iran strike. And basically, the sum and substance of the article is that the U.S. is still dragging its feet, you know, for this war that Israel wants on Iran. And the focus of this article was attempting to sell this idea that if Israel went ahead and attacked Iran without official permission of the U.S. government, that it would probably be okay because the American people understand Israel's point of view and are sympathetic to it, and would go along with what Israel had done to Iran. Now, of course, this is complete nonsense. If the vast majority of the American people understood Israel's point of view and were sympathetic to it, there wouldn't have been this huge hue and cry demanding that Israel get sent to The Hague for the war crimes committed in Operation Cast Lead. It's nonsense. The Israelis are trying to bluff the U.S. government by saying the American people are on the side of the Israeli agenda, and unfortunately, because our top leaders tend to be so isolated from the American people, they might fall for it. They might just fall for it. I mean, anytime you see the president or vice president or Nancy Pelosi, there is so much Lexan between them and the real world. It's almost like they've landed in an alien spaceship, and there's like a completely different atmosphere inside there, and they don't dare open the window for fear that they'll asphyxiate. That's how cut off from the real world they are. But this piece of propaganda is very dangerous. It's part of a campaign to convince the American politicians that the American people are really behind a strike on Iran. And that is absolutely wrong. We're going to be back for the last segment of our show today after these words from our sponsors.
Without a fight. Hamas go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I touched on this a little earlier in the show, but I really want to get back into this in a little bit more depth. One of the big stories over the weekend, when I presume people were hoping between Valentine's Day and President's Day, it might not be noticed. Professor Phil Jones, who used to be the head of the Hadley Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia in Great Britain, this is the guy at the center of the whole ClimateGate controversy. He has now done an about-face and admitted there has been no rise in Earth's temperature for the last 15 years. This includes the time period of the infamous hockey stick. Now, he's trying to basically hem and haw his way out of this whole thing. People are demanding the raw data and the records to find out, you know, was it really just an accident? Or in point of fact, was, as the ClimateGate software indicates, was there real fraud, intentional fraud, intentional attempt to deceive the people of the world? Trick them out of trillions of dollars in carbon taxes. And Dr. Phil Jones is saying, well, I lost it all. The reason I didn't reply to any Freedom of Information Act request is I lost all the data. Everybody knows I'm terribly organized, and it was here someplace, and it's gone. The dog ate my homework kind of a thing. Now, at this point, I want to remind everybody that when you hear about anything being done to deal with the threat of climate change, it's always somebody buying carbon credits from here or somebody sending money over. It's all about the money. Nobody ever talks about, like, planting more green plants or anything that would actually work to reduce carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere, if, in fact, that's what you wanted to do. Because remember, the less carbon dioxide, the less plants grow. And we are already a planet cursed with famine in many parts of the world. So they don't have the raw data. They haven't got it. Phil Jones has now admitted the Earth has not warmed any in the last 15 years, overlapping the period of the famous hockey stick. It's all a great lie. It's a hoax to trick you out. It's snake oil. It's snake oil is really what it is. Now, Al Gore, the Goracle, who won a Nobel Peace Prize and an Academy Award for his so-called documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, which has since been found by the British courts to be full of fraudulent misstatements. He stole many of the ideas not from science but from science fiction, including a movie I worked on, The Day After Tomorrow. Al Gore is not a scientist. He's not been trained in science. He took the minimum science requirements during his college degree, and he got C's on that. This is not a scientific gentleman. He's a politician. That's what he does. He talks up really good thing, and he gets you to go along with the agenda, which is going to cost you money and stuff. Al Gore is one of the principal owners in the brokerages that are buying and selling carbon credits, and it is making him filthy rich on the backs of ordinary people around the world. Now, when Al Gore set this whole carbon trade scheme up, he had help from Ken Lay. Ken Lay, if you'll remember, was the former head of the Enron group. Now, Ken Lay supposedly died, and we don't see him anymore. But what Al Gore is trying to do to planet Earth with carbon dioxide is based on the same model that Ken Lay used against California, using electricity. If you've never seen the documentary, The Smartest Guys in the Room, about the whole Enron debacle, you've got to watch it. Because that's what this is all about. And I wanted to come back and remind you that the guy who was right in the middle of the whole ClimateGate scandal, who was head of the Hadley CRU that was out there at the forefront with the pom-pom saying, yes, carbon dioxide is going up, yes, it's all the fault of the people, and yes, they've got to pay carbon taxes to atone for their sin, has now done an about-face and admitted there is no global increase in temperature since 1995. Look out your windows. It's getting cooler. This is the biggest conspiracy to defraud the people of planet Earth in history. And it is lying, fully exposed for anybody to look at who has the wisdom to see it. All right, we're going to let that one go for now. All right, looking over at the Eurozone, things are rapidly falling apart there, and it basically gets back to this idea that I've mentioned many, many times before, that the borders of nations serve the same function for the economy of planet Earth that fireproof doors do in buildings and watertight bulkheads do on ships. They contain an accident. If you have a fire in a building and the fireproof doors are shut, you may lose a room. But the building remains standing and the people in the other rooms come in, put the fire out, bring in new furniture and fresh paint, and life goes on. No big deal. If you are on a ship and it develops a leak in one of the watertight compartments and you shut those watertight doors, the ship as a whole continues to sail along. But if in that building you prop open the fireproof doors because it makes it faster and easier to get from room to room, or if in that ship you lock open the watertight doors to make it easier and faster to get from bulkhead to bulkhead, from compartment to compartment, and then you get a fire, you lose the whole building. Or then you get a leak and the whole ship goes down. Well, the same thing is true for the planet Earth. National borders contain economic calamities. It is because of the globalist design to pull down national sovereignties that an economic crisis inside the United States became a global disaster. And for that very reason, you know, we need to study what's going on with the Eurozone right now, because Greece is in trouble. Greece is screaming for the rest of the Eurozone to help. The rest of the Eurozone, in particular Germany, is saying, not our problem. And the whole European Union may fall apart. I think it would actually be a good thing, but it serves as a warning for those of us as the United States continues to decline. We're going to see more and more people coming out of the United Nations saying, wouldn't it be just a wonderful thing if we just had one loving, wise, and benevolent government over the whole planet? And we'll just take care of you. Just stop thinking and give us all your money and do as you're told and all will be well. And, of course, it won't. We've been down this road of global government before. It's what Alexander the Great wanted. It's what Napoleon wanted. It's what the Roman Caesars wanted. What was Ramses II wanted, till he ran into the Hittites. It's what Hitler wanted. And in every one of those cases, the people who set themselves up to be the rulers of the world would build themselves these huge temples to their own vanity. I mean, even after his defeat at Kadesh, look at all the building. Ramses II comes back and builds all these temples. Hey, look what a really good guy I am. And impoverished the Egyptian people doing it. Overtax them, overwork them, basically drove them down into abject poverty so that he could have his temples to his own everlasting glory and vanity. The lust and desire for global government has nothing to do with what is best for the globe. It has to do with this phenomenon that we seem to have in the human race. Every 50 to 100 years, we are cursed with an individual or a small group of individuals who just decide that they want to run it all. They want to be able to say they own it all. They want to stand on a pyramid and say, we am king of the earth. And they don't care how many millions of people have to die in the process or who has to be driven into poverty. The reality is that for a global government to come into existence, every nation's economy and standard of living has to be driven down to the lowest common denominator. What is the worst economic conditions on planet Earth? Gaza. Before they can drop the national borders, the whole rest of the world has to be driven down to pretty much that same level. That may, in fact, be the actual plan. All right, that's it for our show tonight. We're going to quit and start looking at some of all of these hardware and software issues that we had during the show. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time. More news about the Eurozone, more news about ClimateGate, more news about whatever lunacy our government's going to try and come up with to distract from the mess they've made of the economy in our industrial base. So until tomorrow, stay safe. Happy President's Day. Happy day after Valentine's Day. And Aloha, America.